Did you try just hitting play again?
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't go back?
No, I don't know what's going on here.
Well, darn it.
Well, bummer. All right. Well,
I was just telling him about what a great mood that song puts me in.
Yeah, I don't know what the heck is going on with that. Right. Well, you know what? We'll just throw in something here real quick so we can get out of our show here. Here we go. See y'all next week.
Bummer. Bye. See you next week.
Bye.
One thing I need to ask you. Yes, 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 you're so anti-fashion, so worthless. Instead of dressing down all the same.
Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vashon.
This is Tuesday, April 13th, 2021, in the year of the Biden revival, and that was the voice of our founder and mentor, Brian Brown. Yesterday was a notable day in 1961 and 1861, 100 years apart. In 1961, Yuri Gagarin became the first person in space. 100 years before that, the American Civil War began when the Confederate forces fired on Fort Sumter in Charleston, South Carolina. So my question and opening questions to the briefly, in 100 years, we went from the most destructive internecine warfare the United States had ever seen to the dawning of the age of space and hopes of the 1960s for a bright new future. So as we sit on the brink of a possible another American Civil War, do we look to conflict dominating the next century, or do we look to the hopes of outer space for the next century? What do the brieflies think about that?
I have a pretty strong opinion about that. I mean, we're about to fly a helicopter on Mars, for crying out loud. I mean, I think it's going to go. You know, the whole technology, the whole revival of the space program, yada, yada, yada.
And I think that, you know, tremendous technical accomplishment. You know, I didn't know Mars had enough atmosphere to fly a helicopter. So that's a new one on me. But meanwhile, here on Earth, right, I think we face a lot of challenges. People are looking for opportunities. They're feeling disenfranchised, leading to frustration. We see the food lines and how long those are, right? Those are some of the things, Bruce, you could probably tell us historically mobilize people to take aggressive action. So I do hope that the current administration focusing on policies that are widely popular will kind of restore the faith in good government, and we'll see what happens.
Wow. Gail. Go ahead, Lynn. Yeah.
Hey, good morning. I have sat with this for 4 years because it feels to me like our divisions, regardless of tech advances, are getting bigger. And I worry that if we can't find some way to make the technological advances benefits spread out to everybody, that we are headed for something serious. Because I think that we're living in two alternate realities right now. People don't listen to each other. People don't feel connection with the other part of our country. And it worries me. And you know, I hear people saying all the time, we are headed for another civil war. And those of us who have benefited from and like the tech world, I think, are on the opposite camp. And it just feels to me like what you said, Kevin, is if we can find a way to spread out and meet in the middle a little bit with some of the technological advances and social benefits, that maybe we can head it off. And if we don't, I think we're headed towards something conflagration wise that we don't want.
Yeah. I'm hopeful that we are actually turning a corner with the current administration, replacing the old one, which was so controversial and seemed to thrive on creating conflict, even when maybe there one didn't, you know, didn't exist. So I remain hopeful. I also see a nation that I think would be very difficult to separate because, you know, with back in the time of civil wars, there was a clear delineation amongst the states, and we don't really have, not completely clear. Obviously, there were people on both sides in every state. However, there was a long traditions as well as laws that allowed things in one place and not in another. And that, of course, was what the final straw was of that. But I also would add, if I may, that I don't know that it's an either or. I remain hopeful that technology can maybe continue to help us see one another. Even, for example, being on Zoom like this, and so many people able to communicate with people all over the world face to face. We've all got the lesson at the same time. It's one of the upsides of the pandemic has been this tutorial on how to communicate without being in person. So I'm hopeful that we don't actually separate, but that we continue to come together more and more, not only as individual states within the United States, but as a world to face some of the biggest issues of our times.
Wow, some interesting observations. Yeah, Kevin.
Well, I kind of put things in a value proposition frame, if you will, and every one of us looks for value, if you will, and it depends on what your interests are, what you're looking for in your life. But the value proposition leads us to, you know, who we associate with, what do we spend our money on, how do we spend our time. And the value proposition has to be so that unity and working together provides a greater value than disunity and fighting with each other. And I think that if you look at the place we are in history of technology, we are at a point where one of the largest industries in the world is going to have to end. That is the fossil fuel companies, because the global warming, which is really undeniable, has to be addressed. And that creates huge economic opportunity, not only for high technologists, but for the labor force and really the bulk, the majority of us, right, benefit because of the huge transition that we have right in front of us. So do the masses of people rally around those things that we hear from the president that are popular and recognize the value of unity and working together? Or are there, frankly, some at the top who there's the one very strong and well-researched theory says that they kind of like being the oligarchs in the country, and they are well served by the masses who are, frankly, not receiving very much in pay, certainly relative to their pay, and they love the idea that they'll kind of keep it going. So it'll be interesting to see who emerges in this fight if there is a civil war. You know, who's on what side? Is it the masses or the oligarchs? Is it the Republicans versus the Democrats? Who decides where their values lie? So, sorry, kind of a long and rambling, but I think that's what we should be looking for.
Mm-hmm. Gail.
Bruce, I wanted to ask you if you'd weigh in on that from a historical standpoint and your observations of the current state of the union.
Yeah, in part, the United States has always been a nation of conflict. Okay, the initial political conflict between the Jeffersonians and the Washingtonians / Adamses, the emergence of the first populist movement in the United States with the Jackson Revolution, in the 1820s, and then the Civil War itself, an ultimate struggle over what the meaning of the Declaration of Independence really is. And can we take those stirring words of all men, all people are created equal, and build them into our political and legal structure? And then, the populist progressive movement of the late 1890s, early 20th century, the New Deal of the 1930s, sort of the civil rights, what I would call broader rights revolution of the 1960s and 70s, African-American rights, Chicano rights, LGBTQ rights, the list goes on and on. And now we're in the midst of another struggle. And, in each one of those struggles, the nation has moved forward in terms of opening opportunities, opening recognition of diversity, not without struggle, not without steps backwards, but in effect, each one has been a leap forward, not without consequences and not without pushback. But, I'm the eternal optimist in this kind of thing. I see us moving ahead through this period of conflict, and it could become another civil war. It's certainly a cultural war at this point. Whether it turns into a shooting war or not, is debatable. But it will have consequences. And my sense is it will lead to a great leap forward, to coin the term, if you will, but not without consequences. So that's sort of my perspective on it. Yeah, Kevin and Lynn.
If I could just add, I had the good fortune to be online with Black Pack this weekend. So if you haven't, as our listeners, if you haven't encountered Black Pack, BLACKPAC, it's worth looking them up. They are an amazingly capable, thoughtful, and forward-thinking group who deals with the challenges we face today. And in the face of some of the latest, things that have us, as they said, us white liberals all on the edge of our seats, their position is it's nothing new. And if you consider their arc of history, right, and that they're still struggling for equality And it's been generations and hundreds of years they've been struggling for equality. And it just helps to kind of center us in what Bruce just said. It's a long road ahead. There's conflict at most of the turns. But it's so rewarding to spend time with folks who see that arc of history so clearly. And they're just here in the faith, the hope, the expectation that this democracy will actually live up to its expectations. And it's very rewarding. So check out Black Pack. I think you'll enjoy that you encountered them.
Yeah, Lynn.
I'm really grateful, Kevin, for those two things that you said, and Gail, for your equanimity. I really appreciate that. I think the thing that I am probably most concerned, I don't disagree with one thing you said about values or about the opportunity to move forward through this. I think the piece that continues to get stuck in my craw is the evolution of Fox News and the NRA and social media, which are disinformation outlets and hate speech outlets. And I think that we can talk among ourselves about all these high-flown ideas, you know, from now until doomsday. And hopefully at least Kevin and Bruce are out in the public arena where people can get exposed to your ideas. But I'm quite concerned that we have allowed Fox News and social media to kind of be these platforms dedicated to conflict and misinformation because it serves someone. I'm still trying to figure out who exactly, but I think that people really need to think about what they're feeding themselves as we try to overcome, you know, this big challenge we have ahead of us as to how we can avert war and avert such inequities that it's a economic war, if not a physical war. And that's what I think a lot about.
Great. We've heard from all the briefers at this point. Let me take a few moments and introduce everybody again. With us this morning in the Gene Bosch studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vashon is our master virtual mix, Zoom modulating sound engineer, and treetop miracle pilot, Truman O'Brien. Truman has a week plus of reflection after staring down the angel of death in the treetops of Oregon changed your view of the world at all?
I didn't know. but I will say, interestingly, on Sunday, a friend of mine flew me back down to the crash site, and we flew over the whole area. And I've found it a little bit, I don't know how to describe it. I wouldn't say it was, there was an emotion there that I wasn't aware of in approaching
fear?
That.
Perhaps
not really. not really. But it was, as we came into the valley there, I said, oh my gosh, look at those trees. Man, it's just nothing but trees. And then we actually found the spot where we went in. And so then I took over flying, and we flew around the spot so I could get a look at it. And it was kind of cathartic a little bit. I felt gratified in some ways that, geez, you know, I put it the only darn place where we could have put it and made it. I mean, there just was no other place. It was both, you know, very lucky that I was able to get there, a little bit of skill in picking the spot and getting us in there, but a heck of a lot of luck involved. And anyway, I felt really good about it after we came back, and a little more relaxed and a bit more confident maybe. But yeah, Kevin.
Well, you know, Truman, I wanted to ask you last week. I spent a fair amount of time in the Mountaineers and a couple of decades out off trail. Right. Roaming through the Cascades and the Olympics.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happened is about every 2 years, you refresh your skills with the first aid, you know, mountain oriented first aid course.
Right.
And everyone who went through that class ended up with like another 3 or 4 pounds in their pack because of all of the, oh, this could happen. Oh, that could happen.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. Is anything that you think you might, you know, add to the plane next time you go up?
Oh, you might say that we've been doing quite a bit of research on that. Not only spending money on our other airplane with safety and technological advances, which we'll
enhances safety. I mean, a lot, and a lot of money involved there. But also looking at satellite phones, you know, a little bit of survival gear and matches, you know, maybe some matches. So you wouldn't have to use a battery to start a fire. I mean, you know, that would
be essentials, right?
Yeah, that would be kind of important. But you know, but you're also you're looking at weight and bulk, you know, so you really want to keep everything light and portable. But one of the things, hey, we found, you know, satellite phones are quite expensive, but we found out that there's a satellite text device where you can send text via satellite, which is not that expensive at all. And we thought, well, gee, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, so we're looking at that. We don't have to hear somebody. We can just send them a text, you know. Lynn, go ahead.
Hey, Truman, I was just wanting to tell you I'm so glad you made it out of there. And there's two quick things I wanted to say besides I love you, man, and I'm glad you're well. Did you see the cartoon that was in the paper this week of a helicopter hanging upside down in the telephone wires and somebody is on a cell phone saying, hey, at least we've gone viral.
yeah.
So yeah. You certainly made the news.
Oh, yeah.
But the other thing that I wanted to say was that what you did in flying back there reminds me of the old advice for horse owners that I had to listen to. You know, if you get thrown, get back up
on that horse
as soon as you can.
You bet.
So that doesn't embed, you know, your experience doesn't embed.
Yep.
So good for you for doing that.
Yeah, no,
you're a cool head all around.
Yeah, well, we'll see. No, but it was interesting. I was very surprised at the feeling that I got flying into that valley. Very interesting to me. So anyway, but successful all around. So,
Mary's going to continue to let you fly.
Oh, I think so. It's kind of in my blood, you know, after all these years, 60 plus years, you know.
So out of the land of magnolias and staying secure in her home on the island of Madronas comes the analytic academic social worker, poet, backup singer, and former all-star shortstop for the Dixie debutante, Lynn Kerrigan. Lynn, what's been catching your attention this week?
Hey, good morning. Well, I ventured off island this last week. As you know, I wasn't there for the radio show last week because I went with my daughter and her children and husband to Suncadia, east of the mountains. And we got in some kayaking and some tennis and some hiking and some biking in a manner that was pretty safe for a gigantic development. You know, they had everybody spread out and doing distance kind of activities. And it was really quite lovely until we went to a restaurant in Roslyn, which I hadn't really been to that much. And I'm going to call them out. We went to the Cold Chute Cafe, where all the servers were masked, but the owner and the greeter who showed us to our seats was not. And somebody called her out on it right there in the restaurant and ask her why she wasn't masked. And she just said, hey, you are endangering yourself by bringing yourselves out to dinner. And your risk is not my problem.
Whoa.
And I just realized that if I had heard that on this side of the mountain, there would have been a lynching mob. That's a bad point. Set of words. I'm sorry. There would have been a mob confronting her. And, it was just interesting to be on the other side of the mountains and starting to see that Declaration of Liberty. Yeah. You know, we talk about freedom and liberty is something apparently that is conferred upon you by other people, right, as opposed to fighting for your freedom yourself. Mm-hmm. So it was just interesting, you know, that whole sunny, happy-go-lucky side of the mountains was really fun until that happened. Yeah. Otherwise, it was great.
Well, something that's been brought home to me, my nephew who lives in Port Orchard, has been working from home, and you know, and his wife is a teacher, so she's been inoculated. But you know, his boys are 18, I think, and they have not yet been. But he's been really very, very, very careful. Well, they went out to dinner at an outdoor restaurant just the Friday maybe, and he said, you know, we must have been sitting a little bit too close to someone because sure as heck he came down. He got tested positive.
Oh.
And he's showing symptoms. Not severe, but he's sick. He's got the COVID. And one time. That's all it took. So there you go.
Yeah. I was just thinking about Pierce County and Cowlitz County. And what's the third one? Three counties have had to be put back to phase two. Yeah. Because of those kinds of gatherings and cases and hospitalizations going up. So I'm really hopeful that we can find a way past this pandemic for a while anyway.
So highly visible to all of us on our Zoom screens, but not to you, the listeners, is our erudite editor of Indivisible Vashon's weekly online newspaper for your consideration, Kevin Jones. Kevin, how is the battle for our democracy going this week?
It's an interesting focus of attention, of course. If you do a search for Washington senators and filibuster, you'll find there's a lot of activity in the local papers, including the Beachcomber. If you take a look last week, there's a letter to the editor there that I wrote. There's groups across the state are really seeing the potential for change that we worked so hard in terms of changing the federal trifecta to be Democrats of not happening as a consequence of the filibuster and the necessity to get 60 votes out of the Senate. And so that's really a big focus right now. So check out some of those letters. You can always make a phone call to your U.S. senators, Senator Murray, who said that she wants to make sure things get done. And she is now, just in the last couple of weeks, used the word filibuster. Thank her for that. But we need to know when. Politicians are great for saying they're going to do things, and somehow time just goes by. So we need to have that happen. And our Senator Cantwell has not said a word in support of changing the filibuster rules. So so give her office a call and see if you can maybe convince her to do that.
Mm-hmm. Gail.
I just wanted to ask Kevin if he would give us a little update on HR1 and now, I guess, is it SR1 too in the Senate?
Yes.
I understand that the parliamentarian made a ruling this last week that looks like it might be a workaround the filibuster. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think the parliamentarian, I'm not sure that, because there's a lot happening. So, Gail, I'm not sure that I have the latest on what's going on. But yeah, the parliamentarian did make some rulings that they thought that could put more content into reconciliation, which is a process that's generally focused on the budget. And so I think that the details of exactly what can be passed are not yet clear, but I got the impression that they could utilize the process more than the limited two times that we initially thought this year. And so that would be a step forward. The challenge, of course, is we need at least 50 senators to vote for something. And, we have Democrats that across the entire range of, very liberal and very, moderate. And Joe Manchin of West Virginia, of course, is sort of the standout example of moderate. And Kristen Sinema of Arizona is another good example. So whatever the Congress does, they certainly have to still be political and still really work to show the value of the changes that they're proposing.
Thanks.
Okay, Gail, you bring back an otherworldly perspective to us on this day that Yuri Gagarin was circling the Earth. By that, I mean Orcas and Lopez Islands. Those are the otherworldly places, right? As a futurist, writer, dream catcher, peripatetic poet, Gail, what insights do you bring this week from your perspective?
Well, I don't know that I could claim this as my insight, but I did come across a quote by Eleanor Roosevelt that came to mind as we were talking a little bit earlier about justice and war and where we're going. And she said something interesting. She said many interesting things, but she this is quoting her, peace is not just the absence of war, but the presence of justice. Hmm. And I really appreciate that thought, that it isn't just because we aren't in armed conflict doesn't mean we actually have real peace. And I think it has to include that presence of justice. And I think as we move towards a more just world, we will see peace follow. I think that is the route.
Yeah, I find that interesting to think about, particularly during this week where we're in the midst of the Derek Chauvin trial, and the additional killings of a young black man and the assault on a U.S. Army lieutenant medic, and all three black men who didn't get a day in court, and what does justice mean, Lynn?
I was just thinking about Eleanor Roosevelt, and then I'll come back to your comment, Bruce, but I read recently that it was Eleanor Roosevelt who worked with the UN. She was kind of, I guess, sent to the UN to work on the Human Rights Declaration that was worldwide accepted in 1948. I didn't know that it was her behind that lobbying effort and the discussion in the United Nations about shouldn't everyone have the right, Bruce, as you said, to, their day in court and to having their identity acknowledged and taken into consideration and not just, majority rule however they want, that kind of thing. But I think, especially since I missed International Women's Day several weeks ago, I'll just shout out to her a great thanks for doing that, because Bruce, I agree with you. If we can't find some way to settle down and give everybody the respect and dignity they're due, I don't see an end to conflict.
Yeah, Gail.
I would just add to that, the UN Declaration of Human Rights, which is its formal title, was signed by all of the major world powers. In this case, it was Mr. Roosevelt who signed it, but Mrs. Roosevelt was, right. As often is the case, there are powerful, hardworking women that are behind the scenes. But that is now, in 48, so it's in the neighborhood of 50 years old, 60 some years old, and as such, it's really become considered international law at this point. Many of the constitutions that have been written in the last 60 years have incorporated the ideas that are in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And it is the basis of international law at this point, from my understanding and research.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, and I'm historian Bruce Holman. I'm always struggling, like all of us are, to make sense out of this messy world we live in. It strikes me that watching Matt Gaetz's spiral into a self-destructive scandal of sexual abuse doesn't matter anymore in this post-Trump world of accepting sexual misconduct as just locker room behavior. Doesn't matter. Particularly Gail and Lynn, I'd like your perspective on that.
Well, I think that there are, of course, lots of individual cases that would that differ in different situations. But I think that our awareness around sexual misconduct directed particularly towards women, that consciousness has been raised. I think, and I can't say I understand why Trump got a pass on that over and over again. But look at the number of men that didn't. Most of the public figures have not gotten a pass on that. And I think our overall cultural consciousness has been changed. I would add to that I'm always kind of pushing the envelope, but I always find it kind of amazing that, the hashtag MeToo movement was wonderful. I mean, of course, I think most people of reasonable sense of justice and for women would say it's a great thing, but I'm just disappointed that it stopped short, that we only are saying, let's not actively abuse women. What about actively supporting women and bringing them into an equal world with equal opportunities, equal pay, access to childcare, all these other issues that underlie it? And I'm not sure why that movement didn't go further.
You know, I saw something recently that I really appreciated, and it was someone who said, I'm going to get this wrong, but rather than teach girls how to protect themselves, blah, 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 how about teaching boys how to be respectful? And, you know, I thought, well, duh, you know, that's exactly right. That's kind of what you're talking about, Gail.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the way I see it is sort of this two steps forward, one step back. It seems like everything has an equal and opposite reaction, if I can go all physics on you, that, you know, we seem to make a lot of progress in some of the identity movements and the rights of women and minorities to not be suffering the depredations of the majority, if you will. And for me, it feels sometimes like, you know, we have a antithesis to that. The boys will be boys, and some kind of backlash against strictures in our world. And it's like the way we romanticize outlaws sometimes, that, you know, here comes Gates riding up on his white steed, being all flashy and, you know, arrogant. And, you know, the defense of his, you know, sexual nature is just, to me, it's part of the old school boys will be boys, and he's a rising star, so what does it matter? And I will just say, it sure matters to women. Women, as half the population, are very unappreciative of that kind of toxic masculinity where it's assumed, you know, men can do what they want and women will suffer. So I hope, you know, I hope that's just a backlash and a misstep that will be corrected. Kevin.
Yeah, I totally align with that. As a matter, you reminded me, Lynn, that back in 2016, I was thinking about, you know, the challenge of putting up with the Trump administration, who is not getting quite the pass as he did while in office. Apparently, I'm seeing some headlines that some religious groups are giving second thought to whether they should be supportive of Trump and the conservatives who support him. But the idea that the threats that we saw in 2016 were, you know, reversal of the right to choose, not supporting the future and the continued trajectory, right, of supporting women in terms of economic equality, wage equality, things of that nature, and the majority that women have in the country. And the women, and my thought at the time was, women are going to become a major political force in the 2020 election and the midterms in 2018, because they're fought so hard to achieve advances that are now at the, you know, signature of a president can disappear. And I think that there's a number of communities who felt threats, but certainly the power of the women's movement. I think just the last comment on this that I want to make sure people know, thank goodness we live in Washington State. There was a big uproar about the sex ed bill and how it was awful. It was going to teach students, you know, things that you have in X-rated movies. And we can't stand for it. And there was a big backlash, right, to try to get rid of it. And then the people came along and said, no, we think it's good. Well, the thing, Truman, that you reminded me of is that that bill talks about when a woman says no, it means no. And teaching boys that no means no is just one of many aspects of that. So how long will it take to see the results? I don't know. Will Matt Gaetz end up suffering in a trial? I certainly hope so, because I think that we need to still count on our judiciary and our laws to hold people to account. So time will tell, but it's a hard accomplishment, right, to hold a sitting congressperson to account that way. But maybe it'll happen. Maybe it'll happen with Derek Chauvin. It's for us to see.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Sometimes,
that whole concept of accountability, and it's what you referred to, Lynn, in Eastern Washington, that sort of, the anti-mask, anti-vaxxers. I mean, there's a whole group of sort of people out there and belief systems out there that see responsibility in different ways than most of the rest of us do. And it's bridging that gap that's going to be the struggle. Yeah, Lynn.
The thing that I think about a lot is the question of power and the question of whether we want to move into a world where the only value is, are you in power or aren't you? I've heard that said in the last political campaigns, we have to win at all costs because what more matters, being in power or being right about all these sort of separate issues? And I think the U.S. has some sort of an addiction to being number one, an addiction to power, some sort of sliding in the values of our government into, just win at all costs, get in power at all costs, and then you can do what you want. And I think if you don't balance that with some of the values, Kevin, that you brought out and Truman that you brought out, where we're really trying to do what's right for people. And, spread out the benefits of being in a, quote, advanced civilization. Otherwise we're kind of pigs in suits and we haven't evolved very much. And it just seems to me to be an ongoing battle.
Well, and in part, the times that American democracy has broken down is when people have lost that ability to compromise, ability to step across the aisle and cooperate. To bring legislation, to bring change, to bring stability, whatever, at different times, all through the American past. The American political system was not designed for intractable opposition. It was designed for collaboration and compromise. And those have become bad, those have become evil words for many people. And to the extent that we've devolved away from that sense of a collaborative effort in politics. We're gonna see that what happened with the Civil War. We're gonna see what happened with the Jacksonian Revolution. We're gonna see what happened with Jim Crow, where intractable forces take charge for a period of time, ultimately vanquished, but at great, great cost. Truman.
So, yeah, that brings up the thought of the whole filibuster question, and. If you get rid of the filibuster, then you've got, it's going to be all or nothing, and with the filibuster, at least you have to try and negotiate with the other side to get them to come over to your side. So I've been really wondering about this whole filibuster idea and what happens when the whole thing switches and the Republicans are trying to do something and they need to have the Democrats on board. I don't know. I'm kind of wondering about that. Kevin, you obviously have some thoughts on that.
Well, I've read a fair amount of that, and I'm certainly reading from a progressive biased perspective most of what I read. But I think we can all ask ourselves whether the filibuster is creating the opportunity for negotiation and compromise, or is it not? And I don't see, do we see evidence that it is? And I would say that I don't. I'd love to see evidence that it does. But a lot of what I've read is that, our history says that the filibuster doesn't create that dialogue. And it's easy to just be in opposition now. So that's one of the challenges. The other thought that comes to mind for me, and I struggle with this too. I have come to the conclusion that I think the filibuster should go. We are one of, I think we may be the only country on the globe who has a system like that. Certainly for things like removal of a president, you want more than a majority, right? So those things are in place. But for standard procedure, requiring more than a majority is not the trend in the rest of the democracies of the country. And the other thought is that there's this risk that people say, when the other side's in control, it's the McConnell quote, scorched earth. Literally, he said that. Well, I think that a democracy needs to be serving the people. And I would say, let the filibuster go. let the Republicans get back in charge and let them try to remove a woman's right to choose. Let them try to take away health care. Let them try to implement some of the policies that they seem to aspire to and see how long they last. A democracy that is constrained can never get to representation of the will of the people. And that's the fear that I have today with the filibuster. And I've asked whether others in communities that are not as wealthy or have as many privileges as the one I'm in, whether they feel that they want to take the risk. And across the board, the people I've talked to said, get rid of the filibuster. Don't hold it on my behalf. I'm ready to have it gone. So I feel pretty strong in my position at this point.
I will say amen to that. I really support every word you said, and especially since the history of the filibuster was rooted in white supremacy. That was one of the first times it has been used. And, you know, I feel that we have a poison pill that we have all taken in the United States. And that is one of our fatal flaws, that if we can unearth our predisposition in this country to white supremacy and accept that other people have the same rights to freedom as we do, then maybe we can make some advancement.
So, you know, maybe that even split does lead to more negotiation, because if you only need one or two people, you know, then maybe the negotiation, the whole walking across the aisle is going to be better.
Yeah, it's worth talking about and getting different perspectives. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not a simple a simple issue and not a simple decision. So, I mean, I really appreciate the opportunity to see different points of view and maybe find different solutions. But we're fairly stuck right now. So hopefully we can have a break into the logjam and start to move on some of the progressive or some of the legislation, some of the things that people in the country care about.
Definitely. So Truman, it looks like we're seeing lights in the distance.
We are getting to that point where we've got about 15 seconds here, and I think I hear the sound of the foghorn and the lights coming. So we'll see you guys all next week, huh?
Sugar Hill, way up in Harlem. If you miss the A train, you find you'll miss the quickest way to get to Harlem. You got to hurry, get on now, it's coming. Oh, listen to those rails are humming. Two. You must take